It's been tough for scientists to convince the public that climate change is real and it is a threat. Yet, that was the blunt message of the fourth National Climate Assessment released late last month by the federal government. Scientists from 13 federal agencies warned of the growing dangers we face from climate change. To Andrew Hoffman from the University of Michigan, this latest report makes an important economic case. He is the Holcim Professor of Sustainable Enterprise at the Ross School of Business and the School of Environment and Sustainability. Now, you say, Andy, the latest National Climate Assessment, coupled with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, the IPCC report that came out in October, are both part of a shift in discourse happening right now around climate change. What is this shift?
Well, one of the problems with climate change is trying to get people to see it as something relevant to them. And so we typically talk about three forms of ways that people disconnect themselves from it. It's going to happen to somebody else, it's going to happen someplace else, and it's going to happen far into the future. Therefore, it doesn't become personally salient. But a lot of the conversation recently and reports coming out saying, no, the effects are happening now, and they're going to get worse in the near term. And they have dollar signs connected to them, and that's key for making it salient.
So that psychological distancing starts to erode when you start talking dollar signs and what it can mean to your pocketbook.
And to you. I mean, this isn't going to be people in low-lying areas of Bangladesh anymore. It's going to be people who live in states, and we know them, and they're friends of ours. There are survey data to show that the number of people who believe that climate change is real is creeping up. And most notably, Republicans. It's above the 50% mark and continuing to grow. And when you ask, why are you changing your position, the answer is always the same. It's because of the strange weather we're having.
And you recently wrote a piece in The Conversation titled, Rising Insurance Costs May Convince Americans That Climate Change Risks Are Real. So to that point and what you're leading us into, what does it take? What more will it take to make climate change real for people who don't have that scientific background?
Well, they need to hear it from somebody that they trust. And certainly the insurance sector can be seen as an honest broker, might you say, someone who doesn't have a dog in the fight other than looking at the data, looking at the statistics, looking at the payouts and saying, this is costing us more, so we're going to have to adjust our coverage and we're going to have to adjust our premiums. And that will get people's attention. The number of natural disasters has tripled since 1990. This isn't science data. This is data from Munich Re, a reinsurance company in Switzerland. And the number of natural catastrophes, natural disasters in 1990, just over 200. Last year, well over 600. Last year in the United States, the highest amount of insurance payouts, $330 billion. This costs money, and someone has to pay for it. And that will make people sit up and notice. That's just talking about insurance payouts, but damage from natural catastrophes, like Hurricane Sandy, for example, 50% of the damage was uninsured. So that cost is borne by the individual homeowner and the taxpayer.
What did you take away from the latest National Climate Assessment for the Midwest's economic future?
Well, they talked about particular sectors that are going to get hit particularly hard. And agriculture is one of them. And, you know, whenever I talk to people who make the money off the land, I always ask them the same question. I say, do you see climate change? I'll get one of two answers. It's never no. It's either, are you kidding me? Of course I see it. Or, I'm not ready to say climate change. That's that liberal stuff. But something weird is going on, and I've never seen this before. So anyone who is connected to the land, and that's certainly agriculture, sees it happening. You know, I remember talking to a coffee grower in Costa Rica, and he was like, look, I'm growing varietals I never grew before. I can't grow the ones I used to grow. I'm seeing pests I never saw before. I'm irrigating fields I never irrigated before. This is what we're dealing with. And so those are the people on the front line, and certainly agriculture and tourism is a second sector.
Michigan.
You're talking Michigan. And, you know, this state is all about water. It's part of our identity. If there becomes problems with access, certainly as temperatures rise, algae blooms happen. Who wants to go to the beach in a state that has algae blooms? That will affect tourism dollars, agriculture. I remember a number of years ago, remember that cold snap we had, the warm snap we had in January, followed by a very cold snap, and the cherry crop got decimated.
They had to import cherries from Europe for the cherry festival.
Yeah, I remember when Cherry Republic had the Polish flag out front cherries.
That's it.
And then you can look at just the shift in certain plant species. Scientists are anticipating a day where you will not be able to find buckeyes in Ohio.
You know, this week the UN Secretary General declared the world is, and this was his quote, way off course in its plan to prevent catastrophic damage from climate change. Is it too late? What kind of transformation of the world economy do we need?
There's a really interesting question there of whether do you really try and scare the bejesus out of people to get them to move, or does it just sort of demotivate them and get them out? I struggle. The IPCC report and the National Climate Assessment do a lot of projections out to 2100. Now, a lot can happen between now and 2100. So you can look at the science and say, if nothing changes, this is where we're going. But people can change. Societies can change. And they can change rather quickly when properly motivated. I like to think of 9/11. Our conceptions of freedom and privacy changed overnight. So what kind of an event, what kind of a stimulus could society have to get it to suddenly take this issue very, very seriously? There could be some major technological advance that could get us to say, think about the old promise of nuclear power, energy too cheap to meter. That could get people to buy into it. A major catastrophe, or significantly, there was a study that came out in Nature Climate Change in November, making the point that by 2100, again, this magic date, 2100, which, again, for people is still too far off.
It's very far.
You and I will not
be
here.
I was saying that to the gang here. Well,
right.
I'm gone.
But our children or grandchildren
absolutely
will. So it's their future. But they came out and said what we will deal with in 2100 is not just simply natural catastrophes, but compounded, that you'll have multiple ones. And I do remember a very vivid conversation with some folks at Swiss Re. And if you're not familiar, reinsurance companies insure insurance companies. So they're looking long term. Mm. And they said if we had three or four Hurricane Sandys or Hurricane Katrinas in 1 year, you'd find a tight constriction of the insurance market. You can't drive a car. You can't build a house. You can't sign contracts without insurance. Insurance makes the economy go. An example, if you remember the Bhopal disaster in India.
Mm-hmm. Remind everybody what that was.
Well, so you had a Union Carbide plant in Bhopal, India. And they had accidental release of methyl isocyanate. Thousands of people died.
Yeah.
And Union Carbide almost went down for this. There was an arrest warrant for the CEO. If he set foot in India, he was going to be arrested. Insurance companies saw this and thought, holy smokes, we have no idea what we're doing on pollution insurance. Pollution insurance backed up. You couldn't get it. It reemerged 4 years later at 11 to 15 times the price with much less coverage. When insurance companies do that, business practice changes. Are we going to self-insure? Or if we want to get the insurance company, we have to change certain practices.
It's a formidable prod.
Right. So if insurance companies start to move forward in restricting coverage, and there are glimpses of it here and there. State Farm pulled out of the state of Florida because they're regulated. They need permission from the government to raise their rates, and they wanted to raise the rates for coastal properties, and the state said, you can't. They said, then we can't cover it, and we're out of here. Mm. There was an interesting event. I'm blanking on the insurance company, but there was an insurance company that tried to withhold coverage to some municipalities west of Chicago for natural catastrophe disasters by saying, you should have been anticipating climate change because your big neighbor to the east, aka Chicago, has been doing it. Now, the case got thrown out, but it was a sort of an opening salvo of insurance companies start to adjust their thinking and their coverage on insurance. And it's not just natural catastrophe payouts. It's business interruption insurance. If your company goes down, there's insurance for that. There's also directors and offices insurance. If you've got a CEO who says climate change is not a problem, and then all of a sudden they get whacked with some liabilities, shareholders have a right to sue that CEO. There's coverage for that.
Okay.
And if climate change becomes an issue in there, and that brings up a very interesting point. Shell has just announced that they're going to link CEO pay to carbon reductions.
And I've heard that talked about. I think that's been in the works.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a really interesting development of just different aspects of the economy, because this is an economic issue.
But speaking of the CEO, let's talk about America's CEO. So this climate change warning is put out by the federal government, and the man in the Oval Office says he doesn't believe it, shrugs it off. What are we supposed to do with that? I mean, how do we rally to meet this challenge when our president rejects it and doubles down on coal?
Well, I mean, first of all, they had to release a report. It's required by law.
Yeah.
They did release it on Black Friday. It didn't seem to squelch it. The president can come out and says he doesn't believe it. But, you know, this is interesting because there are many within the corporate sector who are moving anyway. You know, our example of Shell, and there are many other companies are saying, this is our future. Either A, for economic and market and strategy reasons, we're going to move towards this, whether you're in electric cars or alternative drivetrains or renewable energy or battery storage, the markets of the future, we're moving anyway. I mean, I'm sorry, but if the administration doesn't want to acknowledge it, we acknowledge the market shift. But beyond that, many see it, you know, in agriculture, you know, Cargill, ADM, General Mills, they see this as part of their future and they're adapting to it, whether, you know, Trump acknowledges it or not. I like to think of the line that Galileo, when he was silenced by the Catholic Church, he's purported to have said, and still it turns. So people can say climate change is not happening and your response can be, and still it changes.
Andrew Hoffman, University of Michigan Ross School of Business and the School of Environment and Sustainability. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Cynthia.